Hi, this is Eric Foster from STEM Ciders in Denver, Colorado, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
And this is episode 38.
STEM Cider, STEM Cider, STEM Cider, STEM Cider, STEM Cider, STEM Cider.
Hello and welcome to a Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am your Cider MC at this weekly podcast where we are speaking with cider makers and enthusiasts from around the world. And I'm just cracking myself up here because it's July. I'm having some fun with Erica Foster from STEM Cider. Been wanting to talk to this dude for quite a while. And I finally got to do that chat, and we're going to go into his part of Ciderville later on in this episode today. Just cracks me up. I love playing with music. I hope that you enjoy it too. If you do, please let me know. Send me a little tweet to @CiderChat on Twitter, or a little email if you like to Rhea, R-I-A, @CiderChat.com. You know, all that kind of tweaky-weaky music, it's just fun because that is what cider's about. It's about having a ton of fun. And I want to get right into that. Well, although it is very hot where I am in my part of Ciderville, in Australia, they are going into their winter. And to celebrate that, in the land of Tasmania, best known to me at this point as the Apple Isle, they're having a midwinter festival, and that's in the Hunan Valley. And it's, you can follow along on Twitter at HV Midwinter Fest, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes if you want to follow them on Twitter and just see some of the zany photos that I think are going to be coming up. That takes place in mid-July, so it's going to be Friday the 17th through Sunday the 19th. If you're heading over to Australia, check it out. I think that is a kind of festival that I could definitely hang at. Totally tons of fun. If you want to find out more about Australia, check out episode number 31 with Sam Reed. And he is both the president of Cider Australia and works with Willie Smith's. And that was a really informative chat. I'm looking forward to speaking to more Australian cider makers. And again, tip of the hat to Hugh McKellar at Real Cider Reviews for getting me in contact with the folks over in that part of the world. And in my part of the world, at the Cider Chat Facebook page, I saw that there was a new like from Archie and from Michael. Thank you very much. And from Carla Snyder, who writes the blog on cider culture with the Town Dish. So I'm going to put a link, Carla, in the show notes for this episode 38. So any listeners listening along can link up to your blog, which I think is really worthwhile. You know what I really appreciated early on when this podcast came out, and this podcast only came out at the end of last October, Carla was one of the first people to kind of start putting it out there and joining in on the chat in that way. And that's the way it rolls in Ciderville. You know, truthfully, you might think it's just about the cider maker, but there's a lot of folks that come into play here in the culture of cider. The folks who supply the products, the people that means the orchardists, the farmers who tend the pigs and the cows that get the manure, the folks who are spreading it out. So many people, like the apple pickers. That's just at one little level. And then you have the yeast manufacturers, and you have the folks who have the bottles and the labels. And dang, it is just a huge, huge community in the land that I like to call Ciderville. Oh, can you tell I'm getting a little like I got to get outside and go like rafting down the river? I actually don't go rafting. I go tubing, and that's going to be happening soon. Because if Rhea doesn't have too much play, she goes a little basket crazy. But moving on. One more thing before we get on to our chat I want to share with you was a very nice review and rating. This was a 5-star rating for Cider Chat in iTunes. And thank you very much, Invader Zimmon. I think that's how you might say that little name there. And this person wrote, "This podcast is a hidden gem. Rhea has produced a very interesting and informative podcast on the cider industry in America and abroad. She has a broad range of interviews ranging from apple growers, juice suppliers, and cider makers. In the short time I've listened to the show, I've already learned much about the new techniques to try to improve my own cider." Thanks, Rhea. Oh, well, thank you so much. And see, you were mentioning the exact same thing I was saying, that there's just so much going on in Ciderville. It's not just about the actual cider that's in our glass. I know, like you, I'm interested in all the levels of what it takes to get from the apple, even that seed, to that real quaffable glass that we so enjoy. It's just a very fruitful journey. And one more thing about this review. This person wrote that it was a hidden gem, the podcast. And I have been mulling over that while I'm talking to you. And I realize, dang, isn't that another example on how a cider podcast and cider are both hidden gems that people don't really know about? And that impacts distribution and the reason why you or I can't get all the ciders that we want to try, and that there's a limited amount on the shelves, and the reason why it is still only a very small share of the market, certainly in the U.S., and truthfully, even abroad, too. And that is something that I believe this podcast is hopefully informing others and getting that word out. Because I don't really know any other way, unless you are like one mega millions or something and you could do commercials. And there are large commercials, you know, going out there from large companies. That's a good thing in my mind. But other than that, it's by word of mouth that we are sharing a glass, telling people about cider. And I hope that you are telling folks about this podcast, because if it's hidden, then it's a really big loss resource. So I ask you, Ciderville, if you are in a little gathering, speak to a couple of your friends and say, "Have you heard about the Cider Chat podcast? Do you like cider? Do you know what a podcast is?" And if they look at you like they are a sheep in headlights, well, then stop the car, take their phone, show them how to download an app like iTunes if you have an iPhone, or Stitcher, or Google Play if you have an Android phone, and have them subscribe to Cider Chat. Do it for them, because some people don't know how to do that. They don't even know what a podcast is. And that, to me, is so sad. So we want to help people, and that's how we do it. We share a glass with them, as I do every Wednesday night after I put out this podcast. I meet up with friends during the summer. We go swimming. Then I bring a big old, I don't know, pot of metal that I kind of stick my smartphone in, and we listen to Cider Chat and have some ciders and talk about the guest and talk about different things that happen along the way. And it's a nice way to get in the conversation. So if you're doing a Sunset Cider Club, as I call it, and you're part of Ciderville, I'd love to see a tweet. I just do hashtag Sunset Cider Club on Wednesday night, if I kind of remember, if I haven't, you know, I'm not having too much fun, and share that out. I'd love to see some other folks. I'm sure that you're enjoying, whether it's a Wednesday night or during the rest of the week, if there's a sunset and you're enjoying cider, share that. Pass it along. Pass along that cider. Okay. Well, well, well. We're going to move on now, and we're going to head out to Denver, Colorado. This was a really exciting podcast for me to finally get an opportunity to chat with Eric, who was so kind. The team there sent out to me 3 ciders from Stem Ciders, and they were, damn, they were good. Just want to say that. They were really good. Really, really, really good. And this cidery won 9 awards at Glencap most recently. That is a Great Lakes Cider in Perry. That's International Fest there. Really nice stuff that they're doing. And I was amazed, and then I got to speak to Eric, and my only regret is that I did not get to speak to him in person. But Eric, I am counting on that. I look forward to meeting you out there in Ciderville. I know it will happen sooner than later, and all the good folks at STEM Cider. So without further ado, how about if you and I grab a glass and join this chat with Eric Foster of STEM Cider in Denver, Colorado? I first would like to just begin with giving Ciderville a little bit about your region of Colorado based on what is called the Front Range.
The Front Range is really just the eastern portion of the state of Colorado. If you divide the state in half, north to south with the mountains, you have the western slope, which is the primary fruit-growing region of Colorado. And then you have the Front Range, which is where the majority of the population of Colorado lives. And we are located right in downtown Denver on the Front Range. And so we are definitely an urban cidery. It's a great spot. We're in a neighborhood called Rhino, which stands for River North. And there's a heck of a lot of breweries, and there's two cideries and a couple of wineries in this area. So it's kind of become, if you would, the beverage district of downtown Denver. So it's a lot of fun for us. We get a lot of foot traffic. It's a really great place for us to find new cider consumers and introduce them to craft products.
If I was flying into the Denver airport and I had a bit of a layover, how long would it take me to get from the airport to your cidery?
Well, we just actually, a couple of weeks ago, they opened up the new light rail train from the airport down to Union Station in downtown Denver. And there is a light rail stop not four blocks from STEM Cider. Yay!
Touchdown! Yay!
I think, I haven't taken the train yet, but I believe it's about a 40-minute ride to downtown. So, you know, to STEM, maybe it's about 35 minutes from the airport.
Wow, that is perfect. What, and a super boom for STEM Cider and any cider tourists flying in and out or through Denver. I'm really happy for you on that one. So the area where the cidery is that like an industrial area? Or can you give us like a snapshot of what the actual cidery is and the dimension in terms of like being an urban cidery, as you mentioned?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll start a couple of years ago. So STEM opened up about 2.5 years ago, and River North was a fairly industrial area, although starting to be redeveloped into some residential and live, work, play kind of atmosphere. But for the most part, it looks and feels a bit industrial, but we are having some new developments now that are a bit more modern and a bit more residential. So walking through Rhino, it would not be uncommon to see very industrial looking buildings sitting right next to brand new residential developments. STEM Ciders, which is just north of 28th on Walnut Street. If you aren't looking for us, we're a little hard to find. You have to come off the main street into a parking lot that we have, and we're in the back of the building. We have about 3,500 square feet right now, and about half of that is tap room. So as you approach STEM, there is a massive new development going on right next to us, so it's a bit of a cluster right now. But they're putting in a 250-unit apartment building right behind us, which would be great for us, but it's changed the area drastically.
Yeah, I bet the folks wanting to get that apartment there are like peeking down and seeing the benefit of being so close to your tasting room. Maybe I should put in for a little rent down there.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a bad plan. The cool thing is, so when you walk up, we've got a huge mural on the building. It obviously has our logo on it, so we're pretty easy to find once you get in off the street a little bit. And then when you come into our tap room, like I said, we are an urban cidery, so you will not see any pressing operations in our tap room. But as you walk in, you'll be greeted with a very almost barn-looking atmosphere. So we've got a lot of recycled barn wood that came from the western slope of Colorado. There's a lot of rusted steel. So it's a really, it's just a nice, relaxing place to come and enjoy some of our products.
Well, Colorado just has a total relaxed feeling to it, and I imagine you're able to see the mountains from downtown Denver, right? I mean, when you're landing in, you're able to see some mountains. Is that true for folks who haven't been there before?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, from our patio, you can see the mountains, or at least for about another 8 months until that apartment building goes up.
Oh, no. Dang. Well, what are you going to do, right? That's the way the urban sidery goes.
Yeah.
Now you mentioned the Western.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, you mentioned the Western Slope, and I'm familiar with the Western Slope. It's an area that, you know, I've been out to a couple times out in Paonia and Hotchkiss and that region. Is that where you're bringing or getting the apples?
We bring apples from three places. Yes, absolutely. We bring apples in from the Western Slope. A lot of them come from Hotchkiss, actually, you mentioned, and Paonia. Those are the two primary regions that we're bringing apples from Colorado. We also bring apples from the Pacific Northwest, from Washington and Oregon. And lastly, we bring apples in from Michigan, which is where I'm from, and actually my business partner is from as well. So we're fairly connected to the apple growing region in Michigan. We love the fruit that's available in Michigan, so we bring it in for two of our brands, Lassier and Lachine, are both made from 100% Michigan fruit.
Yeah, and I did have Lachine, and that is a delicious cider. I want to get to your ciders in a moment, but I want to keep on going with the story here. So both, and let's give a shout out to Phil. Is his last name pronounced Cow?
It is. That's correct. Yep, Phil Cow.
Phil Cow. Both of you are from Michigan. I'm wondering, you know, what your, I don't know, are they called Michiganians? Your family and friends from Michigan. Is that what they're called, Michiganians, or is there something else?
We are actually called Michiganders, believe it or not.
Ooh, I like that. That's kind of fun. Is that gander as in like goose gander?
You know, to be honest, I don't know. It's a Michigander. It's just a term that we use. So
I think we should figure
that out. It's a little awkward.
We'll have to figure that out over a cider sometime. Oh, boy. So anyway, so your roots are both in Michigan. You landed in Colorado, two really different regions for making cider. One is that in Denver, you have an altitude and not an attitude, but an altitude in terms of you know, the height that you're in. Does that affect cider just because you're probably a lot higher than Michigan is, or doesn't that matter in Denver? Maybe you're right at that same base level.
Well, you know, I don't know that it affects the cider per se. I do think it affects the fruit that's grown here locally in Colorado. Mm-hmm. We grow some really fantastic fruit on the Western Slope. We have really warm, dry days and really cool nights. And, you know, I'm not 100% sure if the altitude affects that as much as just when you're at altitude, you tend to have a lot cooler nights. I mean, it definitely affects the fruit. I'm not sure it affects the cider so much as far as the cider making process.
Not the yeast or anything like that that you've seen. I'm just kind of curious because I know it affects boiling water, and maybe there was some property there, but who knows?
Yeah, we haven't noticed a whole lot of difference in making cider here versus in Michigan as far as the yeast propagation or how they, you know, interact with the sugars. But, you know, by no means am I an expert there.
Mm-hmm. Now, Denver is a huge craft beer scene, and now Stem Cider is there. You've been there for 2 years. What is the reception for cider in certainly in your area, and Denver is probably about 30 minutes south of Boulder, Colorado, which is another huge center for folks who really enjoy excellent libations. What are you seeing for the typical cider drinker in your region?
Well, that's a great question, and I'm not sure that we have a typical cider drinker in Denver. We have a lot of new cider drinkers. We have a lot of very experienced palates in Denver from the craft beer scene, and there's actually a wine scene in Denver as well, but it's primarily craft beer. So we see a lot of crossover from the promiscuous drinkers that call Denver home, always looking for something new, something exciting, never hesitating to try those things. And cider has been very well received in Denver. When we opened up, there were only a couple of cideries in the whole state. And I believe as of right now, we're up to 16 licensed producers. I think 14 of those are open for business right now, and two are about to open. So we've seen a huge growth in the number of producers in the last couple of years. And I know there's even more slated for development coming online in the next couple of years. And I'll say that the consumers of ciders have kind of followed suit with that. When we first opened up, we literally had to educate every single person about what cider is, and even more specifically, what we think cider is, and why we make cider the way we do, and why it's so different from what the majority of consumers, at least here in Denver, had experienced cider in the past. So it was a big education component for us, and it was a big we had to shift each consumer that we talked to into thinking about craft cider, which I think we can all agree is a very different mindset from, you know, the mass produced ciders that have been around for quite a while.
Right. So that leads me to the next question is, do you have a rap that you give to people in terms of describing cider to them?
Well, I think describing cider, I mean, you can describe a lot of different ciders. What I think is important about cider is really, you know, you can talk about dry ciders, you can talk about sweet ciders, you can talk about everything in between. And STEM, we trend to the drier side. I mean, almost everything we make is bone dry and quite acidic. So, you know, what we try to tell people about is think of cider as really just a culmination of all its parts. And it's very important to buy and source good fruits, good ingredients, and use the right yeasts. And at STEM, what we do and how we describe cider is we're trying to showcase the fruit that we have locally, not only in Colorado, but in the United States. And primarily what we use is culinary apples and culinary fruit. So, you know, would we love to work with cider-specific fruit, maybe some varieties from the UK and France? Absolutely. I think you can make some fantastic ciders. You can make some really well-balanced ciders and some, you know, pulling some tannins from that fruit that we don't have readily available locally. But that's not who we are. That's not the type of fruit we have available to us today. So we showcase what we have, and we think we do a pretty good job of making good ciders with culinary apples. And, you know, we like our ciders to be dry. We like our ciders to be fairly acidic. And so when we're describing our products, that's what we use to educate the consumer. That's not to say anything is better or worse. It's just our preference, and it's kind of what we brought to the marketplace.
Right. And I found your ciders really complex. And again, we're going to be talking about those in a moment here. So if I'm somebody who just walks into the tasting room and comes up and says, I've heard about cider, but I have no idea about it. Is this a wine? How would you answer to that?
Well, we would say, first and foremost, no, it's not a wine. It's a cider. It's similar to a wine. It's made very similarly to how a wine is made, but it's different. It reacts differently with yeast, with the nutrients that are necessary. It's a much lower alcohol than wine. So getting something that's shelf stable and that has the biological load to be, you know, much lower, and so that the product continues to be good over time, is very different than in wine. Also, the tannin structure, at least in our ciders, is very different than most wines that are out there. So I think it can be compared to wine. I think it can be compared to beer in some instances, and especially depending on the cider maker and the style of which they're going, I think you can really compare them to both. Mm-hmm. But no, I would not say it's wine. We're very proud to call it cider.
Right, right on. What I've noticed about your cider, it each one is so absolutely unique, and you just want to kind of dip down into that bottle. I'm really, really impressed. And of course, you came away with lots of awards at the Great Lakes International Cider and Perry Competition recently this spring. And it seems like you've really tapped into a major technique here that's really working for both you and Phil. So I'm wondering, and I know Sartorville is too, a bit about your background. And my first hit when I'm drinking your cider is, and I could be totally off on this, but I'm wondering if your approach is in that really exploratory way that we see so often within the craft beer industry, that's not afraid to try something and be deliberate about that, and, you know, with no holes barred. What is your approach there at STEM?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that probably the best way to describe how we make cider at STEM is that we like to use traditional techniques, but use those in a way that we can push the bar. And we do embrace it completely. We're always trying new things. In fact, every Monday we release a firkin in our tap room that is just a new, completely different idea that we've never done before. And we embrace that completely and no apologies. Some of them are great and some of them are not. And we just always try to push the bar of what you can do with cider and what is cider. But that being said, when you really get into it and how we're making our product, it's fairly traditional. We use wine and champagne yeasts. We ferment for the most part quite cool in the mid-50s. We do a lot of oak aging. But we do some fun stuff too. I mean, we do a hop cider, like many people do at this point in time. We do a lot of whiskey barrel aged products. We have a whiskey barrel aged apricot cider out right now. We're just getting ready to release a blood orange cider. So, we make very traditional style ciders. We use, but we also look for some new ingredients and how we can incorporate those into to the cider without losing sight of what cider is, which is, it's about apples, or pears. But in our case, for the most part, it's about apples, and we really want to showcase that fruit.
You are doing a lot with barrels. I'm wondering how many barrels, do you have a program that you call for this, like your barrel series? Like, I have the whiskey barrel aged apricot cider in front of me, and then also the Lachun is also a barrel aged dry hard cider, is what it says on the label. The Lachun is 6.4%, and the whiskey barrel aged apricot cider is, I guess, it's about 6.8%. Both super delicious ciders. Can you give us a little bit of a background, what's going on with all the barrel aging? Because that seems to be an added component that you're, well, from the cider drinker side, you're having a lot of fun with.
We definitely are. And barrels are just fun in general because they're relatively unpredictable. They're exciting to work with because everyone tastes different. So there's a large blending component that is incorporated with the barrel program. We don't necessarily have a barrel series, but we are always doing some fun stuff in barrels. So I think right now in house we have probably right around 100 barrels, if I had to guess, and about half of those are wine barrels. So we have some Cabernets and Zinfandel, and we have some port wine barrels that we're currently aging products in. And then we have a pretty diverse smattering of bourbon and whiskey barrels as well. And we have I would call it now it's seasonal. It used to be a flagship product, but just because of the barrel availability, especially on the whiskey side of things, we've moved it to a seasonal one, but it's called Banjo. It's just a straight bourbon barrel aged cider. It's really nice. It's one of our biggest sellers. But unfortunately, we haven't been able to keep up with demand as we continue to grow. So it's just now released in the fall. And then we do some other just kind of seasonal, fun barrel-aged products as we go out through the year. But, the main focus for us with the barrel-aging program is really around Lachine. It's a cider that we're very, very proud of and that we spend a lot of time working with and blending to come up with just the right profile for it. And that, like I said, is all in red wine barrels.
Mm-hmm. And are those barrels being sourced from like the West Coast? Are you working with any local distilleries?
We are working with local distilleries. Actually, we're working with Law's Whiskey House for this year's Bourbon Barrel Aged Cider, which I said was Banjo. So, but a lot of our stuff comes from Bourbon County, and we've worked with some other local distilleries here in Colorado in the past. We're kind of trending back towards Bourbon County for a lot of our whiskey barrels for the most part, except for Laws. Those guys are fantastic. And then our wine barrels all come from Napa, and we work with a barrel broker called Rocky Mountain Barrel Company, who's fantastic. And they've got a great supply, and their finger, you know, is really on the pulse of the barrel market of what's out there, what's available, and kind of what's coming down the pike.
So at this urban cidery, are these barrels being stored offsite at another location? You said that there's no pressing operation there. So is the cider being made on site in Denver there?
Yes, it is. Right now, all of our cider is made co-located with our tap room. So we all of the barrels for Lachine are actually out in the tap room, so nice. you can see and touch and sometimes smell the barrel aging process happening right in the tap room. And all the bourbon barrels are in the back in the production facility. So to answer your question, yes, everything is made here on site at the moment. We are getting ready to, we're actually in the process of building a new production facility.
I lost you. Okay, I have you back. Hello?
I lost you there for a second.
Yeah, okay, we're back. Great. You were saying that you were in the process of building a new production facility.
Yeah, so we're getting ready to build a new production facility, and when that's complete, we will move the majority of our production into that new facility, expanding our tap room into what is now the production facility, but also leaving some wild fermentation and just small batch experimentation cider making still here. So we will absolutely always make cider here, and we will make cider in our new production facility as well.
Dang, cider's really treating you guys right. You started 2 years ago, and already it was not enough space. And, you know, that's not a negative, really. It's a good problem to have, and you're increasing production. So obviously the market is really looking up for stem cider. You have the bottles, and you also are canning your cider. You have the Malice and the Remedy and the Brand and Bramble. That's like a raspberry. You're kind of doing this from all different angles. Was that your initial intention when both you and Phil started out to kind of, I don't know how you would say this, but really take a pretty gigantic leap into the cider making?
Well, first of all, I have to say, when we first came up with the idea, we were sitting in Tandem Ciders in Suttons Bay, Michigan, which also make fantastic ciders.
I know that,
but
Dan.
But when we first came up with the idea...
That's what Dan...
Yes, it is. It's Dan and Nikki. Yep.
I know both of them, because Dan hails back in my part of Ciderville.
Yeah, they make some fantastic ciders.
Yes, yeah, and good people, too. So you were saying, sorry about that.
No problem. So when we first opened up, you know, cider was a pretty new concept here in Denver, and we weren't sure how it was going to be received. And furthermore, our ciders being as dry as they are, we weren't sure how they were going to be received. So we thought we'd open up with a tap room style, very, very kind of traditional Denver tap room where lots of experimental stuff, always new products. And what we found very quickly was that it was very well received. And we realized that we opened up with a bit too small of a concept right away. So we never started out to be just a single cider producer or just a couple. We always wanted to have a fairly large array of products available and releasing new things. And, you know, to talk a bit more about our packaging, like you said, yes, we have three products right now, Malice, Remedy, and Branch and Bramble, all available in cans. And those are our flagship ciders that we sell the majority of. And I think the can is a great format for cider. I think that it treats the cider very well over time, and it's completely recyclable, and it's also very affordable to release cider into the market in a can. So we're excited about that. But then we have Krabby, Lachine and Lassier are now available in 500 milliliter bottles. And then we have just kind of a rotating quarterly seasonal that we push out, and that's in 750s right now. So So yeah, it's a lot of fun and a lot of variety, and we always have new stuff available, and we're releasing small batch stuff pretty frequently.
Now the can, they're 12-ounce cans, and are they being sold in 6-packs or 4-packs?
We sell the cans in 4-packs, so it's 12-ounce cans, 4-packs.
Okay. Are you doing that canning via a mobile canner, or is that canning done on site too?
We never intended to go with a mobile canner. We've ordered a line, and it was supposed to be here a couple of months ago. Unfortunately, it's not yet installed, although I'm told it will be by the end of the month. So we are currently mobile canning, which is a great option, but has its own challenges as well. So we're looking forward to having our line installed here, hopefully by the end of the month.
Wow, Eric, you guys are like impressing the heck out of me on everything that you're managing here, on top of really putting out amazing product to boot. How did the two of you both get into cider making? You know, how about a little bit of your history there? And why the heck cider? Was this something that you've been hankering for a while? Obviously, you're from Michigan, so you knew about cider. But what was your path to this moment in time?
I mean, being from Michigan, cider is just part of our blood. And it starts when you're young. And the cider mill experience, which if you're from an apple region, you definitely know what I'm talking about. Fresh juice and donuts and family fun and the whole nine yards. And I grew up in that environment. And then when I got older, I actually got a job at a cider mill in Northville, Michigan called Parmenters. And great place, great family. They run a hard cidery now as well. And they really, took me under their wing and taught me everything you would need to know about the juice side of the business. So I started working on an apple cart outside selling apples in bags to people as a kid, and kind of worked my way into the bottling room and line. And then ultimately was working in the press room, and then eventually got into making some apple wines and ciders, which was just really exciting. Although I will say that I didn't learn a whole lot about cider making there. It was more on the juice side and the business side of apples. Ended up ultimately leaving Michigan, came out to Colorado, and just fell in love with homebrewing and home cider making, and continued to just make alcohol on a very small scale and have a lot of fun with it. Never really considered it as a career until I met Phil. Phil's wife and my wife actually worked together, so that's how we met. And we started watching Michigan football games and drinking cider and just having a good old time. Ultimately, we ended up taking a trip back to Michigan to tour a bunch of wineries and cideries, and we were sitting in Tandem Ciders, as I mentioned before. And the honest God's truth is we probably had a couple too many ciders and looked at each other and said, we could do this in Colorado. And at the time, I believe there was only one commercial cider maker in Colorado, and that would be Blossom Wood Cidery, which is unfortunately no longer in existence. And we thought, what a cool thing to bring to Colorado. There's a ton of Michiganders in Colorado. There's just even more people from the Midwest. I think it'll be well received. So we came back to Colorado, and complete impulse buy, bought a press, and drove over to the Western Slope and knocked on the doors of like a bunch of farmers until we found one that would sell us some apples. So we bought a couple bins of apples and loaded them into our truck and trailer and drove back to Denver. And keep in mind, we both lived like downtown Denver and in a very urban setting, and set up the press and pressed two bins of apples and made some hard cider.
Wow.
And it was pretty good. So we thought, let's do it again. And I guess that's kind of how the story started. And from there, we started making more and more hard cider, ultimately put a business plan together and opened Stem.
Wow. Now, I know, having done that drive, that's about a 5-hour drive from the Western Slope to Denver. Is that about right?
Yeah, depending on where you end up, but 5 to 6 hours, yep.
Yeah. And totally different terrain, because you have to go over the Continental Divide to get there. So it's one of those, you can't get there from here type of situations. Coming up next in this chat, Eric will be discussing a bit more about his cider making and the cider culture in the Denver area, and also some unique cider series that they have coming up. And some might think I saved the best for last in this chat and at the end of this episode when I discuss with Eric something that he didn't know about, the topic of monkey poop coffee, seeing that coming up we'll be speaking about coffee and cider, and you'll get the scoop on that poop at the very end of this episode. Now let's get back with Eric Foster of Stem Cider in Denver, Colorado. Is there a big homebrew scene in terms of cider making scene for your area there in Denver right now?
It's growing. There's a lot of interest in it now that cider is becoming a bit more of a staple in the marketplace. It's definitely growing. The homebrew shops are starting to carry cider making supplies, which is fun. In fact, I think in a week or so, I'm doing a talk at a homebrew supply shop just about how to make cider. So there's definitely interest. I don't know. I don't have any numbers on who's mm-hmm. making cider at home, but it's surely not as big as home brewers, but it's making progress.
Mm-hmm. And can I talk a little bit about the name Stem? Can you say what is the root of that?
It's actually more the stem of it. So obviously the...
Ba-dum-bum. Go ahead.
I'm looking at the... Sorry. Couldn't resist.
Yeah.
We were sitting around tossing names back and forth, and we started looking at the apple and what was cool about it. And, you know, the stem is really what ties the fruit to the tree. It's the lifeblood for the fruit. And we thought that that was very relevant in the cider making process. So really that's the name kind of stemmed from there. We didn't have a huge story about it. We looked at it, we liked it, it stuck. We ran with it.
Mm, yeah. It's really nice. Labels that Stem Cider has just to describe this as Ciderville. It's an apple and you know, it's dark. And then the inside has what looks like the apple seed. And, you know, the stem coming out with a single leaf. It's just a really pretty logo that you have there. And I did get a question from that from someone, so I should really ask you where that came from. And I love that idea that it really is a connection to the tree. That's a perfect name. Let's talk about some of those ciders that you have there. You are kicking out these like unique ciders, and not just the ones that we mentioned here, you know, the firkins. What is the limit for you? I mean, you know, in terms of the idea, like what is real cider? And that's why I brought it back to that piece that you're kind of approaching it in my mind in that really crafty way of the sky's the limit, because I always see the apple being really forgiving or welcoming, I should say, not forgiving, in that it welcomes any type of spice or other fruit into the juice and will go with it like to a happy party. Is that what you're doing there at Stem? I mean, it just seems like the sky's the limit for what you're going to be making.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that the sky's the limit as long as you're using quality products. You know, there's a lot of people out there making cider right now, and I've got pretty strong opinions about this, that are putting things into the products that I don't believe belong there. And I'm not saying that like hops or this and that. I think it has to start with quality ingredients, no matter what they are, and you can make a quality product. And I would say that's kind of our mantra here at Stem, is that it has to start with good parts, and it ends up making a good cider. And whether those parts are something crazy that you would never anticipate being in a cider, or they're fairly traditional, is irrelevant. But, you know, when I tell people, like, when people ask me what good cider is, I tell them to look at the ingredients. Because if it starts with good ingredients, and you have a good cider maker making the cider, you're going to get a great product. And it's going to be different and variable depending on who's making it and what they're trying to do. But it has to start with good ingredients. And so that's our focus. But other than that, the sky is the limit.
Are you talking about the actual juice? And can you be a little bit more specific in terms, you're pressing the cider off-site, bringing it. So I imagine that this is it concentrate or is it non-concentrated? What are you talking about there?
Yeah, no, it's not concentrated. We use single strength juice, and we don't use things like apple essence, glucose sugars. You know, we're really focused on getting our fermentables from the fruit. We're focused on bringing in single strength juice because we think it's important for the product. We think it produces a better product. So I guess that's where I'm getting is that we. You know, we're always looking for the highest quality ingredients possible.
Mm-hmm.
And we encourage others to do so as well.
Are you doing any back sweetening with your ciders?
Right now, we do not. We're getting ready to release an off-dry cider, and it will be back sweetened with juice.
Mm, okay. So you tend, if you're going to back sweeten, your direction would be to avoid using anything other than like the pure juice for back sweetening. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what we believe. Yeah, absolutely.
And did I see a cider with coffee?
You did. we did a collaboration with a local coffee roaster here called Novo Coffee. And there's some really great folks. They're right down the street from us. And we came up with this crazy idea of making a coffee cider. So we went to them and we're doing a 3-part series. The first batch we did a couple months ago, I think, and it flew. It was gone way faster than we anticipated. We did release it in cans as well. And we just finished up the second part of the series, and it is available in cans right now as well. And then the third part of the series is going to be what I think is going to be the most exciting. It's actually using the fruit of the coffee instead of the bean, and that's called Cascara. And we're pretty excited about that. It ends up drinking a little bit more like a tea than it does a coffee if you were going to make a product from just Cascara and water. But when you put it in with cider, it makes a really exciting journey, I guess I would say, for a drink. It's really nice, and we're excited to let that out here probably in the next few months.
Thank you so much, Eric, for spending time with Ciderville and myself. Very informative chat. I mean, when you think about the fact that Stem Cider just really, in the bigger scheme of things, just opened, and already they had to look at increasing production. Well, there is no doubt in my mind that a cider is going up, indeed, and that they didn't just hold back when they were opening. They went full on with thinking, hey, we're going to put this in cans, even though their canning line isn't quite set up. Maybe by the time this podcast is live, it will be. And that they went with bottles and the whole full gamut. I mean, that is pretty cider bold for one, and also speaks volumes for their business savvy and their cider making. So cool, cool stuff. Make sure you go to the show notes for episode 38 and see some photos of Eric and the team at Stem Cider, a little bit about the menu at the tap room. I know that perhaps you and other listeners in Ciderville are always interested in what's happening if you go there and what you could expect in the tasting room. And in this case, I call it a tap room. I wonder if folks are going to be calling things the cider tap or the cider house. It's interesting that we use tap room. It's kind of a beer phrase. I just realized that. Oh, always an adventure in Ciderville. And speaking of adventures, make sure you wait till the end of this episode when I bring you on an adventure of discovering what exactly is monkey poop coffee. And I'd like to thank the folks who are the patrons of Cider Chat, all 11 of you. It is fantastic. Thank you so much for helping me get this podcast out to Ciderville. And if you would like to become a patron, it's pretty super duper easy. You could just Google Patreon Cider Chat and the page will come up. You'll get to see a fun little video. And if you subscribe at $3 or more, you get a transcript of Neil Worley's chat on Keeving. It's a 15-page transcript. And that episode is number 26, Neil Worley, Worley Cider in the UK. And there are lots of things for patrons of a Cider Chat, including the transcript, the Keep Calm and Drink Cider magnet and t-shirts, and the green baseball cap that says a Cider Chat on the front. It has that nice logo. And that is what Steve Wood of Farnham Hill was mentioning in the chat when he mentioned a nice apple, nice logo. Even he liked it. My goodness. I mean, if Steve likes it, I think it must be a pretty good logo. We try to keep it simple and on topic for you. So if you're a commercial cidery and you would like to support this chat, you are so welcome. There is a level just for you, as there is a cider for every palate. All right. Well, I'm going to roll out of here. Make sure you wait till the end of this chat for that discussion on coffee, monkey poop. What is that about? In the meantime, this is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. I look forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Going up, going up.
Not.
Well, I wonder who in Ciderville has too. Well, of course, you know, coffee is growing out there in the jungle and stuff. And the monkeys, you know, they are always picking the most ripest and perfect fruit off the trees. And they'll ingest it and then digest it, I guess. And then you get those very particular coffee beans coming out of there. Now, I don't know if that's folklore or anything, but I did have a coffee producer tell me about monkey poop coffee, which goes for pretty high, it's very high labor. A perfect story for Ciderville.
It is. I would have to look into that. I don't think we'll be making any cider out of that, but it sounds interesting.
I think it's cost prohibitive. Okay, Ciderville. So here's the actual scoop on monkey poop coffee. It does not exist. It would be dangerous even, I guess, because monkeys carry different diseases. And so I guess somebody was pulling my leg when they first told me that. However, there is a specific coffee. In fact, it is considered the most expensive coffee in the world. And it is not from a monkey, but it is from a cat. It's the Asian palm civet cat, and it's found in India and Indonesia primarily, I guess. And what happens, just like the monkey, the cat eats a bean and then passes it through the digestive tract. And I guess elephants do this, and there's some birds, and there's a couple different animals that do this, and the bean comes out on the other end. And it is not something that is you would call monkey poop. With the monkey, they just chew on the bean, and then they spit it out. And that particular saliva from the monkey has an enzyme, and it somehow works on the bean and creates this really interesting taste. And they have this with bat coffee as well. So who knew that it wasn't as simple as just pulling the beans off the bush, the coffee bush, I guess, and harvesting it that way. And watch out for the silly rumors that go around Ciderville, because this is a land of folly and fun. See you soon in Ciderville.